Hello, and welcome to Word and Work, an intersection. I'm your host, Dr. Dale Meyer. With me today is Reverend Mark Kiesling, the Director of Youth Ministry for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. He's recently put together an LCMS study of young adults, and this extensive document is something we want to explore today. But before we get to that, let's visit Amber Hirsch to find out what's happening on the Concordia Seminary campus.
Thanks, Dr. Meyer. Many of our alumni and their spouses reunited on campus last week for the 2018 Alumni Reunion. Highlights of this special event included a presentation by Reverend Micah Glenn of the Lutheran Hope Center in Ferguson, Missouri, a banquet featuring the Gospel of Mark presentation by seminary professor Dr. David Schmidt, special recognition in the chapel of the Jubilarian Class of 1968 alumni, and of course, plenty of time to reminisce with old friends. Alumni also had the opportunity to contribute to the John E. Meyer Memorial Alumni Book Endowment Fund, which provides books for first-year seminarians. I'm Amber Hirsch reporting.
This is Word and Work, an intersection. I'm your host, Dr. Dale Meyer. Joining me is Reverend Mark Kiesling, whose full plate of duties, and it's full, includes directing the LCMS Youth Ministries programs and resources, and that includes the National Youth Gathering, LCMS Servant Events, the Lutheran Young Adult Corps, Lutheran Youth Fellowship, and the Youth eSource website. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you, President Meyer. It's great to be here.
Man, I had trouble reading all of that. Do you have a life outside of work?
I do. I work with an amazing group on our staff that does tremendous work, as well as great pastors and DCEs and other people across our synod that work to partner in youth ministry. So it's great to work with all of them and to team on a lot of these things that we do out of our office.
Super. Well, some of these I'm familiar with. My daughters were active in Lutheran Youth Encounter. But what is Lutheran Young Adult Corps?
That's a new program that we have for young adults post-high school, which is an opportunity for LCMS young adults to have extended service opportunities. Right now, we're mainly in urban cores, and these are both two programs, a 10-week program over the summer, so kind of like an internship opportunity, but then also a 10-month service, which again connects young people into service, highly connected to an LCMS congregation, but also our recognized service organizations or other mission opportunities that take place. Right now we're in St. Louis, we're in New Orleans, we're in Detroit for the summer, we're in Boston and doing some great service, and also allowing the young people to kind of have a gap year, if you will, to learn more about their vocation that they want to serve in the future, but also to learn about their gifts and abilities that they have. So it's been really cool. It's only the second year right now, but really some great fruit coming out of that as we engage young people in service.
Now, how long does a stint last?
So we have two programs. One is a 10-week summer program, which basically is kind of June, July, August. And then we have the 10-month program, which is essentially August through the rest of the year till May. And so we really have young people from across the country that are serving again in those key cities, looking to expand it a little bit, but to give them this great opportunity to serve and to benefit our LCMS congregations and others in the name of Christ.
Now, years ago, decades ago, there was a study by the Search Institute that said that young people who are involved in servant projects, like the Young Adult Corps, are more likely to keep their faith. Is that still true?
I would say that's for sure. We don't necessarily have our own study, but we would see through the study we'll talk about here more in a little bit about those opportunities for them to engage in leadership and to learn more about their gifts in that environment with other people is a great connection for them to the church. And so it's just a great opportunity for them to learn how God has gifted them, learn how what it means for us and our vocations to live out the light of Christ and to show his love to others, and then also to form relationships too with new people as well as the people they serve alongside.
I'm glad to hear that. I really like that, and it's a great thing for me to learn about. I mentioned my daughters were in Lutheran Youth Fellowship. In fact, one of them was involved with LYF with one of our professors, Dr. Herman.
Yes.
Yeah. So just for our sake, our listeners, what is LYF again?
Yeah, so Lutheran Youth Fellowship is a program that's been going on now for 30 plus years. It's about encouraging young people, high school students now, in their leadership abilities as they get connected into the church as well. primarily now where we focus on is a leadership event that takes place in March. So they actually come here to St. Louis, and we go to a retreat center, talk about general vocation pieces. How are they serving now in their vocations as a young person, but then also think into the future, whether that might be church work careers, whether it's as doctors, as teachers, whatever it might be, how God uses them out into the world to share the good news of Jesus Christ. And then we also always have a topic too. So we've talked about faith during life transitions, going off to college, other things like that. We've talked about how are we, this vocation of in our digital world, how do we operate in social media? How do we share Christ in that time and also hear the information that's coming towards us well and build those filters, which is a key part of our life today in our country and in our world.
That sounds like good information for adults, all too. Adults, it really right, exactly. is.
I love the curriculum just because it's a good learning experience for me as well. So that's a key part that we really kind of focus a little bit. This next year, we're going to be looking at taking our Everyone as Witness program that we do in the Synod, about how then do young people take that information and again, share the love of Christ in their context back home.
You've been in your position a long time.
I have officially as director have been that since basically 2016, but I've been with the staff. I was actually working there full-time and a student for full-time for a number of years, and then officially got my call in 06 to 06. Be in the office.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like this, your activities are energizing you.
You're not
growing old in the job.
No, it's great. Yeah. Get to work with great people, work with great young people, and so it's a joy every day to be a part of that.
Let me ask you about another thing on your plate, and I may not even be pronouncing it right, Youth eSource?
Correct. So that's our online youth ministry resources that are made available primarily for those who are youth ministry practitioners. So pastors, DCEs, lay people, teachers who are working in parishes that are working with young people. So a lot of Bible studies, devotional resources, theological talk sheets, helping to extend, again, that teaching that we do in our LCMS congregations for young people. So that's something that we've been doing for over a decade now. So again, we try to be connecting to current events that are taking place, topics that are going on in the lives of young people. And so we release and update those on a regular basis, but then we have longstanding helps when it comes to planning events, to being able to, again, encourage young people to get involved in youth ministry, encouraging parents along the way as they raise young people in the faith. So a lot of resources that are there for congregations to use as well as individuals.
And I'm wondering, to what extent do our pastors and church workers and lay leaders mm-hmm. know that this all exists?
A mixed bag. Yeah, we do our best to try to get it out, but primarily, we have our avenues that we certainly push the materials and connect with the audience, but we're always amazed sometimes when we go to events and people have not heard of it. So we're always looking for ways to get the word out about it. So thanks for this opportunity to do that and be able to encourage people to use that. As they're there, it's free. It's a free resource. All goes through our doctrinal review processes and things. So it's great information for people to have and, again, to encourage young people in their faith.
Well, we have a good audience, so I hope that we're able to help you toward that end. Now let's shift over to the LCMS study of young adults. I've heard you talk about this several mm-hmm. times, and it's impressive. Could you tell us what you set out to do and how you did it?
Absolutely. So a number of things came about. We actually started with a presentation did at the Theological Symposium here at Concordia. And I was just looking at raw numbers at that point in terms of looking at our baptismal numbers over the years in the Synod as well as our confirmation numbers. And we had seen certainly the aggregate numbers, have seen those numbers decrease, the number of baptisms per year, the number of junior confirmations per year, and looking at kind of that spread of seeing it as a way of how do we connect with our infants through the time when they get confirmed, primarily still in the Synod in eighth grade.
To demonstrate that, we have a hallway at our church.
Yes.
Where all the confirmation pictures are up. Mm-hmm. There used to be 40.
Right.
Down. And correct. You're saying that's common throughout
that's
the church.
That's common. And you're going to see that every congregation is going to have a story. So you're going to talk to some congregations and they're going to have that exact situation. They're going to look at those numbers and they're going to be able to see, oh, that's when the plant closed in town. That's when families moved away. That's when we had it. We know that we started closing public schools even because families had just to move where the work was. And so you're going to have individual stories where churches are going to have that. But we also saw it as the Synod too at whole. So it wasn't as though necessarily, they might leave this church in Indiana, but then they relocated to a church in Colorado. We didn't see that we saw overall those numbers decrease as a church body too. The other thing that was really part of that first presentation was it wasn't only the aggregate numbers, but even the percent of our baptisms that would say 13 years later, if just to use that as a common marker, were making it to confirmation age, was also going down in terms of, if you will, a retention rate mm-hmm. of our baptisms decreased, starting already with the baby boom era. And one of our concerns is we were hearing a lot, well, it's just those millennials. And so this would be kind of our young adults now, that they just, aren't in church, they aren't connecting with the church. The reality is they weren't there to begin with. No. They weren't being brought into the waters of baptism. Their parents weren't, if you will, in a large scale sense, weren't bringing them into the church. And so it wasn't
to blame
the
millennials. Say that again.
So, well, what we would hear, one of the things that we sought out to do is we would hear, not just in the LCMS, but in the Christian church in general, you can go online and find all these articles about blaming millennials for not being in the church. Why aren't they taking church more important? Or why aren't they connecting? And we've kind of thought, looking at our statistics within the LCMS and other things, is that the reality is they weren't there to start. So they weren't brought to the waters of baptism. Even though our birth rate within our country was very high, our baptismal rate within the synod was going down. So comparatively, comparatively to previous generations, we just did not have those number of baptisms in totality, in totals. But then even then, our retention wasn't there to where they're being baptized, but they were not, if you will, connecting with the church through at least where we could see another statistical point at junior confirmation.
So one of the points here is, let's not just pick on millennials.
Correct.
Could you tell us, how you define a millennial?
So what we pretty much went out with, we did the study in 2017, as we were looking at those aged 18 to 34. Generally, when you look at demographers, they're going to call millennials those who were born between 1983 and 1999, are kind of the years that they look at for those that are millennials. So again, what you're seeing now, your young adults, soon to be, probably young parents, those that are, a little bit into the workforce for a few years now, but really kind of those young adults that you're going to see in your congregations.
What are some of the characteristics of these millennials?
Very much connected in their technology, but yet as we see too in many other research that still relationally struggle maybe in those face-to-face connections sometimes that take place where the church can be a great opportunity to make that connection, but still very much wired into their technology for information. We've kind of used that piece to where no longer are we as adults or is the church maybe the gate to information, but now it's a matter of creating filters for how do we filter through all that information that's coming through. They're craving relationships and connections and service, as we talked about before, those opportunities to serve, to make a difference in the world, to be able to take their faith out into the world and their vocations to be able to do that are some key things. And then I think I love just highly creative, highly connected, just intelligent young adults that we see in the millennial generation and really open to, they love to travel, love to connect, and really some great young people to work with.
Let's underscore what you just said, because I think these characteristics are important. First of all, you said they're wired.
Yes.
They are digitally native.
Correct.
This is what they grew up with. And we have some of the crew, taping this program.
Yeah.
They're those kind of people. Yeah. And I think that they were born. The umbilical cord was cut, but they had the phone in their hand. So that's what we're talking about.
Correct.
Even at the seminary. Again, just highlight some of the other characteristics, because there are so many. I think it's significant for us to know.
Sure. So again, very much involved in wanting to serve, kind of those big picture pieces to ask the question, why? Why do we do these things? What difference does this make in our world?
And hence your Lutheran Youth Corps.
Exactly. So opportunities to serve, and not just maybe be in highly organized opportunities, but just on a daily basis, through the relationships, through their connections that they make, and how does their faith make a difference when we're talking about the Christian context. But even outside of Christian context, you'll see people highly engaged in serving. So you see the movements around environmentalism, other things that take place in our country, is they're very much engaged in about moving into service and into helping their fellow man.
Sometimes older people, I'm an early baby boomer, think that if we've had a meeting and talked about something,
right,
we've gotten something done. And you're saying the millennials are, no way.
No way. And so exactly, I'm glad you brought that up. In our congregations, that's one thing that we definitely would see different, that I think before we come out of this time frame of who's on the committee, when's the meeting, and then what we will hear a lot is, well, millennials don't want to do anything. Well, their idea of doing something is they don't want to show up at the meeting. And you're right, they don't, because they want to know what's the outcome of that meeting and what's the difference is it going to make having this meeting. That's what they're concerned about. So it's turned many things for congregations and the workplace. It's not just in churches, workplace, to say, here's how we got to frame things differently, that they're not so much about a checkbox, getting that done, but really what's the difference it's going to make and what's the outcome going to be. And so it's changed a lot about how we look at that management.
I've had to endure a lot of meetings. Yeah, you have too. I'm kind of glad to hear this.
Yeah.
You also said going through that list that they're relational.
Yes. And so that's an interesting thing on two sides. Is one, they're highly connected. So highly connected in our technology. So you've probably seen recently there's been a new Facebook ad as they've kind of tried to respond to some things that have been taking place, and they're talking about it's all going back to the relationship. That's why we started things in the first place. And that's, you know, a great opportunity on social media to connect. So they're highly connected with one another. You know, they're expecting to get responses to things immediately, whether it's through Facebook Messenger or whether it's through some other tech, through a text message, highly connected that way. But what we've seen is sometimes we haven't always, or millennials haven't always developed this understanding of what our face-to-face relationships look like because they're so used to it being in a screen. And so that's one thing, and that's probably even more for younger generations too, is to making sure that we're walking that alongside, as that's a change for us as we learn and as we connect with others about what does that look like in our day of technology.
And they're creative.
Very creative. And so they see that love to, you see a lot of DIY, do-it-yourself type stuff. They love to do that, very creative. And there's just such new opportunities online. I mean, even me, who is not good at that kind of stuff, can go on my wife's Pinterest account or can go on something else and find things for me to be able to fix things, be able to do things around the house. And so that technology and that information just allows them to be so creative and to use their gifts in many and variety ways. So, I mean, nothing that goes along with that is that within millennials, you saw this high increase of entrepreneurial work. So they're not going to necessarily have this idea that I'm going to go work for a corporation and go put in my 20 years. I'm going to go start my own business because I can. I can do that through technology, and I've got the creative and the smarts to be able to do it.
And stay in your pajamas while you're doing it.
Win-win.
Okay, I mean, like I say, I've got a generational gap here that I'm trying to fill in. How are young people with church attendance? What did your study show?
Sure. So our church, our study showed with church attendance is that, and this is, first I'll start with research outside of our research, is that one thing that we saw, and we know, we talk about this, that we see the LCMS as an aging church body. And when we broke down the actual age groups, and this is both from research outside the LCMS, but actually inside the LCMS through the way where we gain our numbers as well, our information back, we actually started asking some of those questions too. Basically, give us some age frames on who are those who are active in your church. Again, saw, not expectingly, of our older generation, those like 65 and older, we have a pretty large segment of the population which is there. And so we see that both by demographers with our average age to just the percentage of people who are in attendance. Then kind of you go down the line, baby boom, younger baby boom into Gen X, pretty consistent with what you might see in the U.S. population and also other Christian churches. And then the millennial was this interesting, where as much as they're the largest population in our country.
And that's important to say, because we always talked about the baby boomers as being the big population.
Correct.
But
not anymore. Correct. So millennials is this largest group now from a demography standpoint and into our country, but yet they're the smallest in Christian churches. And that's both, again, across the American landscape, but then also within our LCMS too. So we saw this very small segment. So I believe, you know, numbers were about, you know, 14% or so of our worshiping body being millennials, when the population is about 24-25% is that same age group. So
25% and 14 in the LCMS.
Correct. And basically that's about the same number, 14-15 probably for American Christianity roughly too.
I have heard this a gazillion times. Oh, when they get older and have babies, they'll come back. Could you speak to that?
Absolutely. So an interesting part about that is it's twofold. Is that one, so we are very blessed to reach out and connect with LCMS young adults who are millennials and who are tied to our congregations and highly active. And they have children. But the thing that we did not hear from them or those who are single and connected to LCMS churches, no one really articulated that. Out of our whole study, only one person said, oh, when I have a family, I'll probably think about coming back to the church. So it's not that it doesn't happen. It's just that it's not necessarily the mindset that they have. So there's other factors as to why then those young people get tied into the congregation. And it might be because of they have children and they come for baptism, they come for Lutheran schools, whatever it might be. But they don't necessarily have that mindset. And so I think it's important for congregations to not just use that and say, ah, well, we'll kind of just wait for that to happen. When the other side of it for millennials, the thing that we see too within our country and within our world is that statistically, millennials are getting married later in life. And that may not change for future young generations too. So where it used to be statistically, you'd get done with college at 22 and you're married at 22, 23, and you're starting to settle down and have a family. Millennials are getting married later into their 20s. So here you have this, again, this long gap where they're not into maybe that normal institutional role where they would be married and being into congregations, be looking for a church as a married couple. So now we got to rethink that too as churches. How are we engaging with young singles? I really appreciated one person that was at our symposium. Her kind of challenge to the church and the people who were there is, as a church, let's ask better questions of young people in our churches. So instead of when you see a young person at church, don't ask them about their spouse because there's a higher percentage they're not married. So rather ask them, what are your passions in life? What excites you? Why are you here? Like, what brings you to this church? And ask them about the individual, because again, that's a societal shift that we've seen with millennials marrying later.
I can imagine a congregation that has 100, 200, 300 people in church every Sunday, mostly older, and they might say, why should we bother with the retention of young people?
Right.
Terrible thing to say, but you know, why?
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, sometimes where we're encouraging congregations to really, to maybe fight that attitude in places where that's there, that again, to see the holistic beauty of the church and one, the importance of intergenerational ministry that takes place. I think it's one thing that's great about LCMS Church is we've received feedback about this from outside our walls too. A great thing about the LCMS is how we value worship together. And that, you know, you're going to show up on most LCMS churches and you've got all generations that are there. And it's not just multi-generational, but how do we make churches be intergenerational, that those generations are connecting through educational opportunities, service, and in worship too, so that young people see that pattern in their life, not only from their parents, but other people who care for them in their lives. And so that we're about showing that love of Christ to the next generation and be able to be great witnesses to them what Jesus has done for us.
What are some specific ways we can do that?
Absolutely. So five key things came out of the study is what we kind of started to boil down a little bit. One of them was, definitely what we saw was the importance of parents. And so we saw that how when parents model that faith life for young people, that there's that higher opportunity for them to connect with the church. That's everything from regular worship, prayer at home, Bible study reading at home, devotion at home, just talking about faith, or as often it is, talking about life and bringing it around to how our faith intersects is oftentimes how the conversation happens. But how are parents actively involved with young people? And how are parents maintaining that relationship with the church as well? So that there's that important piece too for young people to see that even when maybe the young people move away to college or go into careers, mom and dad stay tied to the church, because it's important to stay tied to the body of Christ and to be fed by Christ in worship and in connection with the community. So that was one thing that was very important. But certainly we know too, sometimes we have young people that are connected to churches who maybe parents aren't active or maybe don't have a faith life themselves, and yet the Holy Spirit works in their life and brings them into the community. And at the same time too, it's not only parents, but it's kind of that, if you will, it takes that community to raise that young person, to connect that young person into the church. And so the church has a vital role too. Pastors, DCEs, other staff, lay people, other family members that are praying for young people and asking them good questions and also connecting them in their life in Christ. And what we saw, kind of three things that work together, are giving churches kind of that long view of connection with young people and as they walk through different types of phases of their life in their walk with Christ. So giving young people that long view. I always think of our church that I go to, when we baptize a baby, we kind of ask the church to kind of, you know, take that pledge. Will you pray for this young child? Will you be helping them in their faith? And we need churches to take that seriously and make sure we're not losing those young people so that they're back in church that next
Sunday. I guess we could say in a previous time, 50s, 60s, 70s, that kind of happened automatically.
Absolutely.
Because society was, quote, Christian.
Correct. And your general society around you is going to expect you to be on church on Sunday. So things weren't open, right? A lot of things weren't open. Things kind of shut down in the communities, wherever it might be. That's not the case anymore.
So now a congregation has to be intentional about touching the young person.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And making it, again, don't just, certainly parents play that important role, but for the church members to come alongside, support those parents and support those young people. So, one time we'll hear churches that will often do, pastors will encourage members of their church to say, every Sunday you come to church, I want you to find one or two or three young people that you can walk up to and say hello by name and know their name when they come to welcome them, because that's important for them. Because like you said, I think usually, naturally, that used to happen. And now it doesn't. So now we all kind of have to retrain ourselves to make sure that it happens, because that's not necessarily as part of our society anymore. And so how do we help, again, adults and even older young people, too, that even in high school, they can be looking down to the younger kids that are there to start to, again, encourage them, support them, and be able to make that, again, a presence for them in their congregation.
You know, the change over the decades is fascinating, because picturing the congregation where I grew up, it was you know, the 50s. Who's that girl? Oh, that's the Hazelman girl. Oh, who's that? Oh, that's a Yatka boy. Because the families were tight and it was close-knit.
Exactly. And I think that's probably something in general. This isn't just an LCMS thing. But I think, you know, probably some congregations could probably think back and say, yeah, maybe we didn't make the strong transition when young people became more, started heading off to college more and started moving out of the community for educational opportunities and job opportunities, that maybe we didn't make that shift to say they're not going to just naturally come back and work mm-hmm. at whether it was farm, the family business, whatever it is, that they're going to go someplace else. And sometimes congregations, you know, still are probably working through that a little bit. Because then the other key thing that I will say that we saw, we actually did a two-part study. We did one with congregations looking at kind of their retention through confirmation. But then we also did one that actually asking questions of young adults. And in the congregational study, one thing that we saw that was an easy thing to lift up, we found that, a large number of LCMS congregations simply don't keep good records. So we were asking them, hey, do you know where this young person that you confirmed 10 years ago is? And what we saw at a pretty large rate was we just don't know. And so that's just a simple encouragement for congregations is keep good records. Know where those young people are at. Know where those families are at. That's the first step in ministry, because that's especially important, as you know, as you send out new pastors every year. You're going to have new church workers, new pastors that are going to come into, and how can we expect them to know people and to call on people if we don't even have accurate information for them to go and make that call to be shepherds of those families?
So a sheep goes off to college, mm-hmm. you know, the shepherd should know where it's at, the shepherd Correct. Or his staff. Yeah, what are other predictors of good retention?
So the one exactly that you pointed to is another key part of that lifelong view of ministry is helping young people through times of transition, the key one being college. And so even there, that certainly time has changed, and even how probably parents are helping young people make decisions about college. So how are we helping families and young people? Okay, if you're putting your checklist together about what college you want to attend to, how are we making sure that church and spiritual connection, Christian groups, whatever might be on campus, are a part of that list. And so we're preparing them on the front end, but then even where does the home church have an important role as young people head off to college to make sure they're getting connected, that they're praying for them, and that there still is a welcoming place when they come back on breaks, but also that they're getting connected on their campus. And then also certainly too, Lutheran campus ministry that's taking place. If you're a church in a campus town, how are you making sure you're getting connected to the congregation? Know where there's LCMS young people who are coming in, and how are we even as a church body? We got a great opportunity as a church body to make those connections, to reach out to the pastor in that college town and say, hey, I know I've got a member who's gonna be on that campus. Would you mind reaching out to him? Because I'm gonna certainly invite them to go to your church, and so that there's a welcoming community for college students as they go off. So that's one huge transition.
One of the things campus pastors have told me is they have trouble finding names.
Correct.
And you could be a 50,000 student university and finding the Lutherans, not easy.
Not easy, right. And I think even back in the day, I remember campus pastors telling me that, you know, even at public universities, they would ask that question on the incoming freshman as the university. What faith are you? Or that's not going to be a part of our life anymore. So it's a matter of how do we then fill in that gap and not just say, too bad it's not the way it used to be, but to say, okay, here's an opportunity and for us to make that effort. And I think it goes on both sides. It's the campus ministry, finding avenues. We're amazed to hear stories about how they get their word out, social media and other things. But then how do home congregations as well encourage young people as they make that transition?
What about involving young people in the life and leadership of local congregations?
And then that was one of, again, the key things that we saw and is one that's very actionable for congregations. So it's about how are we helping young people and particularly even talking about the young adults themselves now post-high school, post-college, get involved in the life of the congregation in leadership. And that leadership, as we interviewed the millennials and got feedback from them, that's a wide range of things. That's from ushering to helping out on Sunday mornings, to being in the choir, to helping with the music at worship, to teaching Sunday school, to being a part of VBS, to then, of course, staff positions, eventually going into being a pastor, deaconess, DCE, whatever it might be, a teacher. And so there's huge roles in that leadership piece. But that was important that we saw that both in the congregational data and in the millennial data, important for the individual millennial to know that there's a place for them to use their gifts so that they're using these gifts everywhere else in the world, so many ways that they are creatively engaging in vocational work. Let's have the church be one of those places, too, to build that community. So sometimes it's a matter of, again, the older generation saying, you know what, I've fulfilled my role, and now my leadership opportunity is to mentor this younger person into this role and to get them into that service opportunity.
Young people won't understand this, perhaps, but you're saying we don't put the young people at the card table anymore.
You got it. So how are we helping them make that transition from the card table to the adult table and putting them into leadership? Because they have amazing gifts and abilities to serve the church, and they want to. And that's what we hear more. The term Juliana Schultz on our staff kind of coined was kind of something, they're overprepared but underutilized. Mm. And so even our young adult core people, Juliana hears a lot, give us more, push us more. Whether it's theological training or whether it's opportunities to serve, give us more. And so they're hungry for that. The other thing we saw in the congregational data, interestingly too, though, was not only was that service opportunity great for the millennials, But then also there was this correlation between getting young adults in the service and then also retaining young people. And we think probably the simple thing is it gives them a visual thing to say, oh, there's a place for me. Once I get through high school and get into college, there's a place for me in the church to be in leadership. And so one, great to put high school students into leadership opportunities. They're confirmed adults in your church. But then also to even see other young adults a little bit older than them in service gives them, again, that visual to say, like, oh, the church is welcoming for me, and I get to use my gifts when I get older. So it's a great, again, mentoring opportunity.
Mm-hmm. One final question. We're talking the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod mm-hmm. and its young adults. How does this compare to young people in other churches?
Great question. And so that was one of the reasons, too, why we wanted to do this study. So we had seen a lot from whether it was Fuller Youth Institute out of Fuller Seminary. We'd seen a lot from National Study of Youth and Religion done, I believe it's been a decade ago. We get stuff from Barna and from others too. And we thought, okay, a lot of it probably correlates with the LCMS because LCMS is part of a lot of those studies in a lot of different ways, individual congregations and such. So we wanted to do our own just to make sure we weren't missing anything. And by and large, what other studies found, either about American Christianity or specifically the LCMS, also rang true for us. So other churches too are still finding those ways about how are we retaining our young people into high school and then beyond. We got great stuff from the National Study of Youth and Religion that actually we do pretty well. I think probably some of it has to do with our confirmation process, that we mm-hmm. connect with those that are in middle school and early high school and then keep them connected in the high school, that numerically we seem to do very well in retaining young people into high school. So some really great things to celebrate as young people rally, or as the church rallies around young people and supports them in their faith, but always, as these studies will see too, things that we need to certainly kind of ring the bell a little bit, see what's going on, know what the trends are, and be able to support young people in their faith.
Man, I like that. Rally around the young people and ring the bell. You know, our program today is ringing the bell for a lot of us. This is fascinating information. When we come back, we'll be joined by five young adults who can give us direct input into what young people are experiencing in our churches today. Stay with us.
Concordia Seminary St. Louis provides continuing education resources for pastors and lay people. To discover all that Concordia Seminary has for you, visit us on the web at csl.edu.
Welcome back to Word and Work and Intersection. I'm your host, Dale Meyer. We've been talking with the LCMS Director of Youth Ministry, Reverend Mark Kiesling. Joining us now are John Broughton, Megan Boyle, Sam Butterfield, Patrick Haviland, and Lila Haviland. Wow, did I botch that. Which one of you is Lila?
Me.
You're Lila. Okay, tell me how to say your name.
Lila Haviland.
Lila Haviland. And now that we've got you on the camera, tell us about yourself.
I'm 18 years old, and I just graduated from Lutheran South High School. And
that's in St. Louis here?
Yes, it's in Afton. And then I'm getting ready to go to college in 3 weeks.
Okay, and where are you going to go to college?
Southeast Missouri State in Cape Girardeau.
Okay, and you're active in the church?
Yes. Yep.
Been your whole life?
Not really. When I was a little girl, we kind of just went on holidays. But then now, my eighth grade year, we found Webster Gardens Lutheran Church, and so that's where I go now.
Okay, so this is new. And what happens to you church-wise when you go to college?
I think there's some Lutheran churches down there, and I went down there a couple weeks ago, and I checked out one of the churches. I think it's Timothy Lutheran, maybe? Mm-hmm. Okay. Something like that. And so I'm planning on attending church there, and if I don't really like it, they always have broadcasts for Webster Gardens. We do live streams, so I can just watch it on there.
Yeah, that's a different thing, Mark, about this day and age, live streams of worship. Yeah. Now, your brother is?
Patrick.
Tell us your story.
Well, I'm 15, almost 16, and I also go to Lutheran South High School, and that's about it. I go to Lutheran, pretty much the same store. I go to Lutheran Church of Webster Gardens with Lila about since I was in fifth grade, I think. So I've gone there, and I always go to youth group and focus, just like me and her both go. So we're pretty connected into the church.
Okay, now you are Generation Z people, right? And Pastor Kiesling, what is Generation Z?
Right, so from demographer standpoint, the next generation after millennials, so basically those born in 2000 and since then until, you know, they're waiting to find out when the end year is, but basically starting in 2000. So, you know, for the most part, again, like you talked about, digital natives, for us as Americans, don't know the world apart from what took place on September 11th, 2001. So kind of that, if you think about those changes in our world, that was their life. And so that's what they're used to the technology. Mm-hmm.
So you look at me as an older person, don't you? Let's see, your name is? Tell us, Sam.
Sam Butterfield.
And tell us about yourself.
So I'm 15 years old. I attend Lutheran South like those two did. Mm-hmm. Or do. I do right now. I play soccer. We play on the same team at South. And so, yeah, there's not much to me. I'm just a normal kid. But yeah, I'm pretty connected in the church. Focus is Wednesday night. We go to youth group. So it's 6 to 8. And we just come in, we play games, we have dinner, all that. It's really fun.
Okay. Yeah. So I have to tell the audience, these young people are all from St. Louis area, kind of obviously, because Concordia Seminary is right here in St. Louis, and this is convenient for us, right? Sir, what is your name, and tell us about yourself?
My name is John Broughton, and actually my family and I just moved here from Minnesota last October.
How do you like summer?
Well, we were actually back up in Minnesota for most of the summer, so I haven't really experienced the full St. Louis summer yet. I'm 17. I go to Rockwood Summit High School, so I attend public school instead of private. And then, yeah, our family's still kind of looking for a church down here, but it's been kind of interesting looking for churches. It's a new experience, because my dad's also a pastor, so we didn't really do that when I was younger. Whatever church he went to, that's what church we went to.
Okay, where were you in Minnesota?
We were in Woodbury, which is a suburb just east of St. Paul, Minneapolis.
Sure. Do you remember Pastor Natasty?
Yeah.
My classmate.
Yeah, he actually baptized me. So.
Oh, I'm sure it took. Yeah.
Well, great to have you down here. And last but not least, introduce yourself to us.
I'm Megan. I went to a Lutheran grade school, but now I attend a Catholic high school here in St. Louis. I love cheerleading and theater and orchestra, so it's kind of like a different mix of things. I'm also a member of Lutheran Church of Webster Gardens. I'm pretty involved there. I like teaching Sunday school. That's what I do a lot, so yeah.
Yeah. So you're all involved in your congregation in some way or other, or will be once you find it, right? Will be once you find it. Do you have friends who are not involved, who have gotten away? Anybody just jump in and talk?
Some of my friends, they go to church, like they're members of the church, but a lot of times they will only go on like certain holidays, and sometimes we'll talk about, you know, like, why don't we go to church as much? And they'll just say, well, either they work or they, you know, they hang out with friends or they're too tired to go in early in the mornings. And I think that's part of, like, they don't have enough time to go is, per se, for what they would want to.
Now, they're still living at home.
Yes.
I remember I was out in high school on a Saturday night, and we were out late, and the next morning, Norma, my mother, comes in and says, I don't care how late you are out at night, you're going to church. So that doesn't happen in every family, huh?
No, not really.
Could you comment on this?
Well, yeah, I mean, we see that certainly in the research just broadly about that importance of parents who are involved and bringing young people to the church, their own children to church. And as I said before, too, that connection to that parents keep in the church even after the young people have left, because it shows that importance that being in that community is. And where we saw, again, a high drop-off was people, young people who are well involved with their families in high school and through those years. We saw a big break again when they go into those college years, because again, maybe those routines hadn't necessarily been set in if they weren't as active. And it was very easy when they made that transition to college to where they were not then tied to congregations. And so we saw that major drop-off between those two groups.
My mom and dad actually sent me the church bulletin every Sunday when I'd gone off to college. Now, I did go to church on Sundays because I was studying to be a minister, but, you know, But that was the kind of connection. We have some more stories about friends of yours, good friends of yours, who have gotten away from regular church. Anyone?
So, like, after eighth grade, most kids, they're just like, oh, I got confirmed, so I'm going to stay in the faith. But they never actually come to youth group or church because, like you said, they stay up on Saturday night and then they don't want to wake up. But that's not really a good excuse for our church because we have 10:45 service. And so, I mean, I don't know anybody who sleeps past 10:45, but, yeah, I think just right after confirmation, they just think that they don't.
College students do. College students do.
Yeah, I personally don't,
yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Any other?
And, I mean, at our church, like, confirmation, to get confirmed, you have to go to Wednesday nights to go to class and stuff. But then after you get confirmed, then it's not necessarily, like, considered a requirement to go to Focus on Wednesday nights. So, I mean, that's just kind of like a different thing because everyone's like, well, now I'm not required to go on Wednesday nights. And now I can, you know, do something else.
Mm. Mark? So we saw, and we'll hear that a lot too, anecdotally, that's another key transition for congregations to help make that tie from confirmation into post-confirmation. So that confirmation is not a graduation, but again, a step in that life in Christ and life in the church so that there's, again, that connection piece that takes place. So some have changed programs. Maybe they don't confirm until ninth grade or they confirm earlier, so there's not necessarily, again, a strong connection. A lot of these went to Lutheran school to where there was both a graduation and a confirmation very close to each other. And so maybe separate those two so the confirmation piece doesn't come off as graduation and to where I've kind of checked things off and I'm not going to be connected.
Yeah, that's so unfortunate. Confirmation is not graduation. I heard a story about a church in the country that had a problem with bats in the steeple. And, you know, they got an exterminator in. That didn't work. They tried all kinds of homemade remedies. That didn't work. And finally somebody said, let's confirm them. They'll never come back. Got it? Got it. Okay. Do you talk with these friends of yours about getting more active in church? You just be honest.
I mean, we'll talk. I mean, obviously, there's other things we'll talk about. We're teenagers, you know. But when church is brought up, a lot of times my friends will say that, you know, I'm going to church this Sunday, but then they'll just be like, no, just kidding. Like, they'll just send me a pic, like Snapchat, social media. They'll just be laying in bed, you know, instead. And I'll be up at 7:30 getting ready to go to church. So, but yeah, we talk about, you know, the different things that are different within our churches, and some similarities too, just to compare and contrast.
So you'll do it on your devices, mm-hmm. Not just face to face.
We can do it both ways. Like, a lot of times if we don't see each other, you know, we're not hanging out or anything, then we'll do it over our phones or computers, whatever type of media we want to use.
And you socialize with these friends. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Other stories?
I mean, yeah, when it gets brought up, we kind of talk about it, but, I mean, like Lila said, it doesn't, I mean, that's typically not necessarily the main topic that gets brought up, but when it does get brought up, they kind of talk about it, and they always have an excuse for why they don't go, and it's sometimes the same excuse, sometimes it's not, like, oh, and like Sam said earlier, like, a lot of people just stay up really late Saturday night, and they just don't feel like getting up and going to church in the morning.
And a lot of times when we talk about it, I feel like it's really brief. It's not like a lengthy conversation that you can have with in our age right now. I don't know why, but it's just a really brief conversation, and then we'll move on to the next subject most times.
It may be uncomfortable for them, and they want to get out of this conversation.
As I mentioned, I go to Catholic high school now, so a majority of my friends were once in a Catholic church, and they're like, well, my church is boring or whatever, like, I'm just like, I just go to service and then that's like it, like, I don't really do anything after that. And I'm like, well, my experience in church has been very different because I have lots of friends that go to church, and I, you know, our 10:45 service, it's contemporary music, so it's a little more exciting and engaging for us. So I like mentioned that, and then I've had friends that are like, oh, well, I want to come to your church. So that sort of thing. So that's a good transition to be like, oh, well, like, I really love my church and I have a lot of fun there. So kind of their experience has just been different, and that's why they don't go anymore.
I wonder if it's different also because you're in a different setting, a Catholic high school as opposed to a Lutheran or a public high school.
Mm-hmm, yeah, a lot of people have been like interested in my, I'll be like, oh, I'm Lutheran. They're like, well, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. And so I get to talk about my faith a little more, and I really enjoyed it. So
I think one thing that, this has come out of the research because we didn't ask them, but one thing we certainly hear from our young people, I think a huge key topic for them is vocation. Because, again, the connections aren't going to be made in the four walls of the church. It's when they're out talking about faith, they're asking questions of their friends and of their peers, and that gives them opportunities to talk about church, about their faith life, and to be able to make those connections. And I just applaud that you're willing to ask those questions, engage in those conversations, because that's often where it starts. It's not going to happen overnight necessarily, but to be able to make those connections and be as someone who's willing to listen to questions and be able to encourage their friends is great, a great start.
Yeah, you don't have to accomplish it in one conversation. You can just let it be known who you are and that you're active in church for whatever reason. And I mean, sometimes it takes time for the seed to sprout and grow. Are there things that you would like to see the church do differently?
I mean, I'm not really sure. I like the way that my church is being run, and I can actually relate to the messages. So like if I'm having trouble in any day, any life, most of the time the message will pertain to it in some way, which is like really cool to me. And then afterwards we'll go and do Sunday school stuff with kids our own age and talk about the message and other things that are just going on in our lives. So I think that the church that I'm in right now is really well run in the way that they engage with us.
Well, that's great. How about, without naming churches, things that kind of put you off? You know, if your church is fine, that's wonderful, but maybe you've been to a church, have belonged to a church, have friends who go to a church, and there are things that older people do that put them off. Anybody speak to that?
I think that in seeing how other church, even like LCMS churches, there are quite a few in the St. Louis area, and we've like played them in sports when I was in grade school, that sort of thing, and I've been to a few of them, and it's kind of their experience is like the kids there are either the ones that go to school there, so then they're like the popular kids, that sort of thing. So it kind of gets a little like hierarchy-ish, mm-hmm. especially when you're talking about, you know, kids who have like don't go to school at the certain church, and then they're coming in, but then all those kids know each other. And that's one thing I like about my church. Like, we have a lot of kids who go to a lot of different schools. So then it's a good experience to meet people outside of your own church or school sort of thing.
Do you ever feel that older people kind of like pat you on the head and say, nice kid, and nothing more than that? Patronized, I think the big word is.
You feel like you can't really do a whole lot because you're not old enough maybe to have a say, or maybe just they feel like you're doing something wrong, I guess. Like you're a teenager and you make mistakes, but some people just, they want to help and they're not really, they don't do all the things that stereotypical teenagers do, I guess. Like people think teenagers go out and party all the time, but that's really not the case sometimes.
Sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes. I'm just talking because, like, I've seen people from my school, they do it. There's always people who go out and do things like that, but just there's other people who don't. So I feel like it's kind of brought upon, like, teenagers that they kind of get a bad rap for how they kind of act, I guess, or behave.
Is it common or uncommon for older people in church to talk to you and, you know, tell me what's going on and actually listen to you, not just go through a quick, you know, how are you doing, and I'm off to the senior citizens group. Common or uncommon?
So in eighth grade, we got prayer partners, and so they choose older people from the church, and they kind of like mentor us as we like take our steps toward confirmation, and they kind of nurture us in the faith. And so I thought that was really cool about it.
Did you learn from that?
I did, yeah. Because I'm still talking with my prayer partners. I went to dinner with them once too, and that was really fun.
And they probably learned from you too.
Yeah, I hope so.
Sure they did.
other stories about older people opening up and being honest with you and talking. Megan, you got something?
My prayer partner, she's awesome. She actually is part of, we have a program called Grow Deep at our church, which is kind of, every sermon series has a read and reflect scripture book that kind of goes along with it, and you can get a text message for that too. But I was given the opportunity to actually, because of her, be able to write some of the devotions for younger kids that go in there. So I was part of the, not this sermon series we're in right now, but the one before that, and I was able to come up with questions and prayers and stuff for those kids to do, and that was a really fun way that I got to interact. Another thing that we do is there's a mission trip with Casas por Cristo. I know Sam's been on that. I've been on that for 2 years in a row, and that's awesome because it's high schoolers, and then it's older people in our congregation that get to go. And I still see those guys. I still like go up and hug them in church and all that kind of thing. They'll be like, oh my gosh, hi Megan, like that sort of thing. So it's really nice to be able to make those connections, especially in a trip like that.
Would some of your friends who have kind of drifted away from regular church attendance, would they be willing to consider going on a trip like that?
Oh yeah.
And might that be the way?
I've definitely talked to people and they're like, oh, like, why do you go to Mexico? Like, you went last year and why are you going again? And I'll tell them about it and they're like, that's really cool. Like, I would like to do that sometime. And I'm like, yeah, absolutely. You can totally come with me or, you know, join our church and then come with me. So it's a really cool way that we get to kind of invite them in.
Yeah, is it fair to say that might be a way?
Absolutely. Yeah, those opportunities to serve and be active for sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let me shift to spirituality. There are a lot of people who, I went to church, check off that box for the week. Or I went to church, check off that box for the month. How do you feel? Is it a check off? I mean, how much is spirituality important to your everyday 24/7?
It shouldn't be a check off. It should be like an everyday thing, you know, trying to talk with God through whatever you're going through with in life. So a lot of times whenever we'll see a lot of people start having problems in their life, and then they'll just be like, oh, I'm gonna pray about it real quick. But really you should be praying every single day about just anything good or bad in your life, just so that way you can keep your faith and you can keep it strong.
Yeah, like I know a bunch of my friends, they're like, they have hard times in their life, and that's the only time they come to church, just to like, they think, oh, God's gonna help me in the problems, but what about in the good times? They're just like, I got myself here. But I feel like they only want God when times are bad for them. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think when you're going like with spiritual stuff, I think you need to look at it with like, I get to do this, not I have to do this. Like go to church, like I get to go to church, I get to worship with all my friends. It's a second family to me. Not, oh, I have to go to church now, check it off the list for the week or for the month. I think you have to have a lot of people need to kind of change their attitude when they're looking at having time with God.
I like the way you say this. I get to. I have the opportunity to. It's a good thing to do. I've noticed as a pastor, and I think most pastors have noticed this, so when bad times come, and I think especially of a death in a family, the people who have a regular habit of church attendance deal with it better, even if it's a shocking, terrible death. They've got the resources that they've built up in the normal times to deal with it. It's the ones who have not done that that come unglued. And that's really a hard time for a pastor to try and talk about things that they haven't prepared for that. I mean, it's just like sports. You have to practice that too. Let me wrap up with this question. So here you are at Concordia Seminary, where we produce pastors and deaconesses for the future, you know, for your generation and generations after yours. What would you tell our students about being a pastor, especially relating to young people?
I think, one, try to get them involved. I think the better or the more young people get involved, the better chance they have of coming to church for the long term. Instead of just kind of having them come and sit and just come and go every week. And get them involved and get them with people connected.
How about the personal relationship between the pastor and the young person?
Have a real conversation. Don't just like, you know, take whatever, you know, devotion or you're doing that day, read it out loud, and that be it. You know, have a conversation about it, have a full group discussion about it, that sort of a thing. That's really what, I mean, I know that engages me and engages a lot of my friends in the church. So I think that's a good thing.
Any other advice for our seminarians? This is your chance. This is your chance.
I mean, just try to make our the messages or what or our conversations, just try to like make them personal and kind of, you know, fun, you know, because I know a lot of teenagers will want to listen to something that pertains to their life for sure. So.
Yeah, what I really like is how my church has a group like on Wednesdays just for high schoolers. I think that's a really good idea that most churches should use. Just have high schoolers get together so they can all relate, and then the pastors there to also talk. So it's fun, and then also you get educated pretty well.
And I'm assuming it doesn't have to be a chock full agenda. It's a lot of just time to do what we're doing now.
We do a lot of games and kind of just little fun things to do, and then we'll do a little bit of talking. So it's about half and half. So
this has been great. It's been an education for an old baby boomer. I thank you, Generation Zers, for doing that. Man, there are so many ways by which the Word of God intersects with our world, and whether it's in the world of youth or something else. It's really been great hearing from these young people about the intersections in their lives. I thank you, Reverend Kiesling, for sitting down and talking about all that you have learned. And thanks to our panelists for the input that you have shared. I'm going to take it home and think about it myself. We look forward to seeing you again. We're especially thankful for you joining us here at Word and Work, an intersection. God bless.
The proceeding has been a production of Concordia Seminary St. Louis. If you would like more information on how you can become a pastor, deaconess, or missionary, please call us at 1-800-822-9545. That's 1-800-822-9545.